You're listening to Rage Quit Radio with Mike Brown, Rich Morrow, Dennis Lee, and Nathan Starwell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 26 of Rage Quit Radio. This is Mike.
This is Rich, and I cheat on mini games with other mini games.
Nathan.
And we are joined this week by our favorite Greenville visitor,
Steve-O.
Worth noting, our only Greenville visitor, but eh. No, Steve-O's here. We just got done recording the second episode of Rage Quit Refit, which would also be known as the roast of Steve-O, but...
It was actually pretty tame.
Yeah, comparatively speaking, I was expecting, you know, pits of flame and, things like that to come out.
It's because I'm more mature than you assholes give me credit for. You can say penis and I won't laugh.
But a mature man... Wait, that's not true.
You laugh just thinking about penises.
It's not laughing. It's drooling. There's a difference.
I don't think we've said this in about 5 or 6 episodes, but this is an explicit podcast. So I did have a friend who was listening to the episode that actually will have gone up earlier this week. It's not up as we're recording this, where we talked about Rama One Half and found the idea that we drowned our podcast in the ancient Chinese spring of the good podcast.
That's up. I listened to it.
That one is up?
Yeah.
I actually didn't finish listening to
you
that.
Actually, the one
it.
Where we're talking about different stuff.
We're talking about anime.
Oh, yeah. She's still up. Well, maybe I'll edit out my stupidity. Maybe I won't. So before we get on to our main topic, which on this edition...
then there wouldn't be a podcast, Mike.
So, how bad can I make Rich sound in that episode of Refit? I still have
to ask. Dude, did you like I give a shit? That's how I talk in person. All right, we're talking about this nerf?
Well, we're going to. Our main topic this week, because as Rich very very accurately pointed out in between recordings, we do have 2 satellite shows now between Refit and Recon that are very much War Machine centric. They are all, yes, I know what I said, all War based Machine. And steeped in the strategy and such of the game that doing the occasional off-topic episode, perhaps a little more often than we have in the past, will not hurt things too much. I happen to agree with him. So we're actually going to be talking about other sweet games that we've been playing lately, not necessarily War Machine or Hordes. I secretly think this is Rich's way to talk about other miniatures games on our show, which may or may not happen by the shit-eating grin I see on his face right now. So before we get started, we're actually going to talk about a new beast that came out recently. This is a new Legion Heavy War Beast. It is the Nerf, and since Rich grabbed the card, he gets to read it. So what do we got? Out loud.
Hold on, I'm reading it.
Out loud. He
can't. I can't do that.
This standard delivery, Richard.
I just wanted to... Here, let's do this.
Okay. So it is the Nerf.
This looks incredibly gay.
The Nerf costs 7 points. He is Fury 4, Threshold 9. He is Speed 6... Matt and Rat, 6-5. Defense and armor is 14-16. He has eyeless sight. He has a grasping tail, which is P plus S 14. He has the hammerhead, which is P plus S 16. And let's see what we're looking at here on the back. Blood creation, so never attacks friendly faction. Warlocks cannot choose them as a frenzy target. It has flight and serpentine, if you've
ever... seen in Angelius.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Angelius, you know what most of this is. Soulless. His grasping tail has an ability called Coil. When this model directly hits a model with this weapon, as its melee attack against that model automatically hits for one turn.
So it's like sustained attack, but it's not that.
But fucking better.
Weapon.
Straight better.
Yeah, because you're sustained attacking with a PAL 16 instead of a 14.
Well, you're sustained
attacking with all
of his weapons, period.
Ah, that's why it's different.
Basically, that rule should be called better than sustained attack.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, the Animus is Vortex. Cost 1, range self. Enemy models currently within 2 inches of this model are immediately pushed 2 inches directly toward this model in an order you choose.
Which is really good on a lot of different Legion casters, too. Rice is like, hey, come here.
Yeah. So she's already got reach.
Yeah, I mean...
but
shut up.
It's almost like Baby Impending Doom.
Yeah.
Baby Impending Doom.
It effectively gives that beast reach.
Yeah.
Is it ranked self?
Without relying on a charge.
Yeah.
What Legion caster that wants to be a melee doesn't have reach?
Well, it used to be Ryus until they eradicated it.
Kallus has reach. Rias has reach. Both thags have reach.
Kallus doesn't want to be in melee.
I'm going to reject your statement. Kallus has reach.
Bethany and Belphegor, maybe?
I don't want to be in that. Well, I guess if she's melded into him,
yeah.
Maybe she wants
maybe,
to have reach.
Maybe, I don't know.
I still feel like she doesn't want to have reach.
I don't necessarily think it's there for reach. I think it's actually there more for, here, let me get this bugger up there in the midst of a bunch of dudes and just get them all out of the way.
Yeah.
You guys made a big deal out of repulsion on the last episode of
Reef. It's very similar.
This is very similar, just it's here, let me get him where he can pull everything away from my crap that's tied up.
You also have to be really cautious, because you could easily, like, you could be like, I'm going to win my scenario. You do that. If you do it in the wrong spot, you're like, shit, now they're contesting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It's a good ability. It's very good.
You can use it with an Angelius. So you can push it 2 inches with an Angelius and repulsion, and then have this guy move up and pull them off at, like,
yeah,
4 inches out of a zone.
I think it's very finesse-oriented.
Yeah. I think like, Saren really likes this beast a lot.
Yeah, like, I talked to Corey, and he was like, man, I bought 3 Nergs. I can't stop playing 3 Nergs. So,
wow.
And Corey's kind of a big...
It's kind of a big deal for the podcast. Corey,
I mean,
Rockman.
Only because I'm going to run. Nomcon 4, bitch. It's happening.
So, what
really?
Legion? Yeah.
Really?
I got a year to talk shit, bro.
What Legion?
I'm going to drown myself in my sorrows.
It's like six months now.
Whatever. I'm an Iron Painter. He's going down.
So, Nerf, I do like him. 7 points, I don't know. What else falls in that 7 point?
There's actually no Legion.
Mostly lights.
Really? So there's no heavy, 7 point heavy.
Nope.
Okay, well, that's spotty fills. So
I do want to point out that 7 points, okay, sure. But with Evail's tier list, it goes down to 6 points, and then you can get her at tier 4 within 15 points.
Hmm.
It's not bad.
And that would be not Penguin Chris chiming in for us. He's one of our resident Legion players. That's not bad. If you want to go for the theme for us and get it that fast.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I will go back to playing Epic Absalonia.
This guy's probably pretty good with her, too.
I give him an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10?
I think the nerf is an 8 out of 10.
He's 16 armor, so he gets shot off the board.
Yeah, he's not the raw server ability or power of some of their heavies.
Yeah.
However, what's his defense?
14.
14. That's,
yeah.
You know, you play
being tenacity.
It's good as the balls.
Does he replace any of the beasts that you typically see in Legion?
At 7 points? Not really.
No.
But, like, the thing is, in the Evel tier, at 6 points, like, two of those is, like, basically Carnivian. So,
yeah.
There's justification to having two heavy.
Pal 16 is nothing to laugh at.
Okay. It's not the greatest either.
No.
I would say
they have a lot of strength bonuses.
They do.
So
yeah, but 16 is right around that range where you're like, you don't really kill other heavies.
16 is the range that kills casters.
Yeah, so, here's the thing with the 16. The thing that piques my interest is this is the guy who walks up, let me boost the grasping coil. And then I'm going to get 4 PAL 16s automatic.
Right. I'm going to hit your caster
exactly
all the time.
So that's the interesting part on it.
Nervous and he could charge for free using the Beast Mistress on the Hillion or whatever.
And it could go to PAL strength 18.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was thinking of Epic Absalonia.
Well, it's time to drown the podcast again, folks. So, with that in mind, we
he might be better. Honestly, he might be better than an 8, but I need to see him on the table before I can go that far.
Oh, sure.
Just looking at him, I'd play him. Like, I would buy that model and play it if I played terrible Legion. So, I'm gonna get a soda.
You do that.
This chair sucks. I'm taking this one.
And let's see if we can wrap this up before Rich gets back.
He's gonna try to buy a warm soda.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah. The vending machine's right here, Richard. But he doesn't have any change.
So, every once in a while, and I know this is going to be one of the games that that Rich will want to talk about. Yeah, there's a vending machine there.
Shut up.
I know.
Ignore me.
I know this will be one of the games Rich wants to talk about every once in a while over at my house. Once every few months, I do a gamer cookout where probably 10 to 20 gamer buddies all show up at my house, and which is not meant for 20 people. And we play games, hang out, shoot the bull, so on and so forth. Kind of like this show, just more food. And so we got to play the newest version of Legendary. Now, I am a big fan of Legendary. Legendary, for those out there who do not know, That is a deck-building game based on the Marvel Comics property originally from Upper Deck. And the Marvel Comics version of Legendary is your standard competitive deck-building game with something of a cooperative tint to it. That is to say that, my God, how much change is that thing going to give you?
Is it like three?
It's a jackpot.
Oh, Richard's been playing the old one-armed bandit lately.
Yes. So, what do they do? Load it with nickels?
I had to put a five in. I don't have any.
So,
can I get a coat? You have coins to spare.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, Legendary, the Marvel deck-building game from Upper Deck. Competitive deck-building game with a cooperative spin to it because the game can beat you.
Yes, the game, and there is one person who wins more than everybody else.
Right. If you defeat the game, then you wind up... If you beat the game, then one player actually wins. And that gets the victory points and whatnot, which leads to the...
Yes.
leads to people, inevitably, when they realize that there's no way in hell they're going to win. It will lead to someone tanking the game.
Oh, yeah. That's the Nathan strategy.
Oh, I'm not sure you created it.
I didn't create it. But that's my strategy whenever I play that game, because I always have, like, the worst possible deck. Like, I don't even like the whole point of, like, deck-building games is to like, buy the cards that you really enjoy and try to, like, find some synergies and make it so that your deck is fun to play. But inevitably, whenever I play Legendary, I go last. The people who go first all have, like, everybody goes before me. They snatch up all the good cards. And I'm stuck with, like, all the cards that are terrible and don't work together.
Okay, now I will answer this criticism of deck building. I will answer this criticism of deck building games in general. I love when people sit there and go, "Well, I'm going last. I'm going to suck. I'll volunteer to go last. I don't care because crap's going to keep showing up in the lineup."
Right, but sometimes, so, like, some heroes are way worse than others, and there are some cards that are way better to buy. Like, if you were the first, like, for instance, when we were playing the Lord of the Rings,
yeah, you get
building.
Pick of the initial flop.
Yeah, exactly. So, like
somebody give me a down.
Whoever buys...
You put a freaking $5 bill in there and it sounded like you hit the jackpot at Harrah's and you don't have a dime?
Not anymore, I'm in the machine.
Do you have one in your car?
Probably, that's way out there.
You better hustle.
Seriously?
No, I have no money.
I have no change.
Crispy, give me a dime.
This episode needs to be titled Richard's Quest for the Snacks and Drinks.
Or possibly Richard Drops a Dime.
That's way clever.
Drop a dime on Richard.
Yes. And Richard
the popo came around and dropped a dime on Richard. Serving a dime down in Kershaw.
No, but I get exactly what you're saying. The new Legendary game, because they've actually dropped a couple new Legendary games lately, there's Legendary Villains, which is the new
I've not had a chance to play that.
Legendary Villains is basically identical to regular Legendary. You just flip the roles between the heroes and villains. Rather than it being masterminds, it's... commanders. And rather than rescuing bystanders, you're actually kidnapping them. Things like that.
It's for the sociopath that lurks deep within all of us.
Oh, absolutely. And it's 100% cooperative, but it's a lot more brutal than regular Legendary, because Legendary encourages you by its rule set to screw the other players at a point when you know you're not going to win.
Yeah.
Legendary Villains encourages you to screw the other players in the rule book. It actually tells you to, after a fashion. It goes, and remember, you're the villain.
Yeah, okay. All right, that was my problem with Legendary, just the base set,
right.
Was I was not rewarded for acting heroic.
Right.
I was definitely rewarded for punishing the other people in the game.
Yes.
So
the new one is called Legendary Encounters, and it is based off the Aliens franchise. And... talk about a brutal game.
Yes.
So, This game.
Did I talk about this a little bit on the podcast that got deleted?
Legendary Alien Counter.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
The missing episode.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
So go ahead, because you've actually played it more than anybody else here at the table.
Yeah, I played it at Gen Con. It was a lot of fun.
And then we played it again at the cookout.
Yeah. The first time we played the game, we had read the rules and we didn't really know what was going on, so. We kind of fumbled through the first couple of turns. There were some cards that were way more powerful. Like, one of the new mechanics for this game is a mechanic called Coordinate. Extremely, extremely powerful. Basically, you get to play a card during other people's turns, basically giving them a free card, and you draw a card to replace it, and they get bonuses. So, Richard's trying to accost me with his child.
I'm doing
this baby now.
So the coordinate card, basically every time a coordinate card comes up, you have no reason not to buy it because it helps everybody in the game. And unlike regular Legendary, this game is truly cooperative. Either everybody wins or everybody loses. So
And some people die.
And some people die, but I mean, like, the that makes things a little bit more dramatic, like, because this game definitely feels way more dramatic than Legendary. Because sometimes you get to the point in Legendary where you kind of feel like you're just kind of going through the motions until the game ends. But in this game, the game we played at the cookout. So the game that we played at the cookout
was legendary.
Real quick, before we get too far in this, to give you people out there kind of the mechanical differences, if you've ever played Legendary and never played the Aliens version, here's what you're looking at. In regular Legendary, there's a city. There's five spaces in the city. The villains come in and they move throughout the city. As they pop up, one new villain card gets flipped on each player's turn. In Alien, rather than those cards getting flipped face up, they're placed face down in the five rooms of the complex. You have to spend one of your two currencies, there's recruit and fight. You have to spend your fight points that you play during the turn to scan the room of the complex to see what you're facing. So if it is a hazard, an alien, whatever the equivalent of a scheme twist is,
event,
if it's, whether it's one of those or not, you don't know till you flip it. Rather than something escaping the table, escaping the city, like it would in regular Legendary, it goes into the combat zone, where, at the end of your turn, you take a strike, which is this wound stack, every turn for each one. At the end of your turn, for each one in the combat zone that ain't dead, you take a strike.
It basically symbolizes, for anybody that's actually a fan of the Alien movies, like, you don't know where the aliens are in those movies, right? Half the time, they're in the air shafts. You're never there when it's there. It comes to get you.
It's really thematic.
Mother of God. Yeah.
And
get over, man.
We'll get to that. And so that's the base. One of the basic differences between the games. The other base difference is, rather than in Legendary, where you are playing as basically one would imagine the generic shield agent telling the heroes where to go. And pardon me. In this game, you actually have an avatar. You are the commander, or the gunner, or the medic, or the asshole that lets the commander die.
To be fair, the actual name for it, the Weyland-Yutani. Fuck.
The asshole who let the commander die.
What Mike said.
So, the Weyland-Yutani?
Weyland-Yutani executive.
Okay. You fulfill one of those roles, you have a certain number of wounds you can take before you die. And sometimes that doesn't matter. So, in the game, those are the basic differences. And then the HQ lineup is the same, where you have your list of allies, you buy from them, they reset
like
instantly.
Ripley and Bishop and, you know, right, people, yeah, whatever Ron Perlman's character from Alien 4 is.
And what is it, Captain Dallas? I died too fast to figure out who I was supposed to be.
Captain Dallas is in the game that you buy. You were not Captain Dallas.
Oh, the commander.
You were random Marine that was on the ship.
Yeah, random generic Marine commander.
As I understand, Captain Dallas died pretty damn quick, or pretty brutally or something.
So. Yeah, in the movies, Dallas dies.
Yeah, so I was told.
Spoiler!
Spoiler!
For this 1979 horror film, Captain Dallas dies. Sorry.
And I was told
what? I haven't gotten to that part yet.
I was told it was really thematic that I died first for some reason. So, anywho, go ahead.
Because you're the commanding officer. The commanding officer in the movies tends to die fast.
I know that Justin will never listen to this show. At least I don't think he will.
Really?
I don't think he will.
Then Justin's a fucktard.
But just in case he ever does, Justin, you let me die. You son of a gun. Anyway. And he left his copy of Lord of the Rings at my house. I found it today when I went home before the podcast.
Justin had had a number of Coors by the time he went to leave, I'm sure.
He might have had a number of Coors before he played that game.
So, Mike, did you die from a face full of alien wing wong?
Yes.
Yes. That's another mechanic in the game. But I will let Nate tell that story because he seems to want to tell the story.
No, just tell the whole story of the game that night.
All right. So... The rule book for encounters actually gives you the thematic, like, how to play through the movies.
Oh, one more thing I should probably add. The game is the first game I've ever seen like this. It is the first deck building game I've ever seen that is essentially NC-17.
Yeah.
It actually has an Ages 17 plus sticker on the box.
Yes.
Because it's kind of that graphic with the
artwork. Right, exactly. It's like you wouldn't take your 3-year-old to go see the movie. You know, I know Richard might,
Dice Tower podcast, when they were doing a review of this,
yeah.
Tom, Eric Summerer is explaining to Tom Vassell, they're the two hosts of that show, Eric Summerer is explaining to Tom Vassell that the game has a 17 plus rating on it, and Vassell is sitting there going, it has a what? It has a 17, it says on the box, because of the graphic artwork, it's 17 years older. Vassal's daughter is the one that did the reviews for Legendary for the Dice Tower. She was in all the review videos. It's Legendary. Of course she's going to go look at it. At this point, Vassal's sitting there going, excuse me, I think my, you know, 9-year-old or 10-year-old daughter is about to do something terrible. We'll be right back.
As Mike said, the art in this game is pretty graphic, especially the strike deck.
Face full of alien wing wong, I think is an accurate statement. For
so one of the strikes, because the strikes are basically how many hit points you take before you die. You just put them next to your character that symbolizes how much damage they've taken. And some of them are like flesh wounds that don't hurt really, really bad. And it's like a picture of like a doctor holding his hand. There's like a tiny little like paper cut on it. And that's like 1 point of damage. And that goes all the way up to like 5, where the 5-point damage card is the alien retractable second mouth going straight through somebody's skull, and it's like blood splattered gore everywhere.
One of my favorites is the alien biting through the dude's hand.
Yeah, so just straight up, like...
Well, there's the one that looks like someone just got shanked with like a stalactite through the chest.
Yeah, yeah, the alien tail's going directly through somebody's chest, so there's lots of pretty graphic art in this.
There's like one where the dude is holding his intestines in.
So, all right. So we start off. Mike is the commander. Richard is the medic. Ryan, who was Ryan? He was playing the technician.
Ryan was the technician.
I was playing the gunner, and Justin was playing
the asshole that let the captain die.
The Wayland Utani.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so the game starts off. And the first objective, because the game is now played in 3 objectives. You've got objective 1 that's like early stages kind of an objective. And you've got a second objective that has more difficult stuff. And the third objective is how you actually win the game.
It's essentially the 3 acts of the movie.
Exactly. So this one, the first objective is the SOS. The way to beat the SOS objective is you have to find both parts of the SOS. And that's it. You know. And the way to find them is you have to let stuff come into the combat zone as it progresses through the ship, or if you scan the various sectors of the ship, you can find them that way. And the problem is, most of the time, you're finding aliens. And another problem with the first part of the SOS is there are about 100,000 alien eggs. And alien eggs by themselves aren't a problem, because they don't really do any damage, but whenever an event card is flipped up, the alien eggs turn into facehuggers, and they'll attach to whoever is... there, like whoever's player's turn it is when the thing gets flipped. And the thing about facehuggers in the game, you have your turn to kill a facehugger, and then you have the person after you has a chance to kill a facehugger. And if they don't do it, you've got a chestburster inside of you. And the chestburster card, like every other deck building game, when you acquire it, it goes to your discard pile. And when you shuffle up and you draw your hand, if you draw the chestburster card at any point that's in your deck, you die. That's it. Character dead. Lights out.
I feel like it's important to know here, something that's probably not the best mechanic to actually use because it makes the game way too hard, but it is very thematic, is when the chestburster comes out, there's a rule where you actually take the role of that chestburster and you get an alien deck and you start trying to kill the heroes.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to play with that variant once. largely out of a sense of bloody vengeance, but I end up getting the face hugger.
I do feel like if you use that mechanic, it's way more incentive to make sure no one dies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I became the... I got hit by the face hugger. Someone else got hit before me.
I think I managed to kill something.
Yeah, somebody got...
It's like the thing
is,
Justin got one on him.
Yeah.
And, like, Nate saved him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, basically...
So the lesson here is, I should have had Justin
Ryan also got one, because I knocked it off Ryan.
Yeah, so the thing is, if you look at your hand and you don't have three fight, you don't scan early on.
Yeah.
Like, you the thing is...
you don't have three spare fight.
And if the person after you doesn't have three fight, you have to ask them. Like, you gotta play cooperative here. Like, do you have three fight in your hand? If you don't, then I'm not scanning. Because if I flip a facehugger, that's it. You know, it's bad.
Yeah, GG.
So, yeah, the facehuggers, and, like, that definitely feels like the Alien movies. It's just... The scene where Ripley and Newt are in the room, and there's the two facehuggers are loose in there, and they're basically
that scene is terrifying.
That scene is truly terrifying, and that definitely feels that way in the game when you're just like, oh Jesus, facehugger.
Yeah, I'm actually going to cover that when I talk about what I love about the game.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I get hit by the facehugger, and I can't kill it. Justin can't kill it, and so I get the chestburster card. When it comes time for me to shuffle up, because I know my luck. Counting on the shuffle, I got one card left in the deck, so I got to shuffle, a discard, pile, and draw. And I literally sit there. I remember looking at Nate. I take the top five cards off. I have one that I know is not the face. I go, we're going to sweat these. I do the whole gambler, you know, lick the thumb, you know. And I just go, one, put the card down, two, three. When I get to the fourth card, I look at it, and it's like the scene from the end of Maverick. I just look at the card and twirl it out on the table. It's like in slow motion, chest burster. Boom.
And Mike's chest explodes.
Yes, and
Mike goes.
The funny part of the story, however,
at that point I go find some refreshments.
Is that Justin is the Weyland-Yutani executive. In the movies, they're always trying to get someone pregnant with aliens so they can take the specimens back. So it was just very thematic.
Oh yeah. It was.
So, We managed to... We weathered the SOS pretty easily. The second part of the game gets a little bit hairy. The second part is close the ventilation shafts. And you have to clear out... Because, like, the very first sector that opens up on the ship is the ventilation shafts. So you have to find the card that actually lets you close the ventilation shaft. And you have to have the ventilation shafts clear. So you gotta make sure... And at this point, the aliens that start spawning are a little bit more difficult. Because... There's one alien that's like four fight to kill if it's within the ship, and then it's like seven fight if it gets out to the combat zone.
I'm curious because I didn't want y'all set the game up overly much. In regular Legendary, you would just take all the villain groups, shuffle them together. That's the master villain pile.
Yep.
And this, do you do it in stages, almost
yes.
like where High Command has the early,
yes,
mid, and
exactly.
late cards?
You do it exactly okay. like that, except that you also add in some random cards from the drone deck. And the drone deck is just like some neutral stuff.
Okay.
And the drone deck has like one facehugger and one egg, and then like a whole bunch of other types of aliens. You shuffle that up, and then depending on how many people are in the game, you take those. And you deal that many into each objective set, so nothing is set in stone. So even if you were to play it again, it would still pan out differently.
Sure, of course.
You shuffle up the third objective set, you put it at the bottom. You shuffle up the second objective set, you put it second. And
okay.
then you shuffle up the first one, and you put that on top, and then you start the
okay.
SOS. So
okay.
you still hit the stuff in the order you're supposed to hit it.
Right.
There's some random aliens thrown in, right. in addition to all that. So... But, like, the aliens for the second objective set are a little bit tougher. And a couple of them get out, and they start doing a little bit of damage to us. You know, like, we take some damage here, take some damage there. I think, because the thing is, like, Justin ends up taking, like, six wounds that aren't healable. Because they're like, aggravated versions of wounds where you can't heal them. And we're making pretty good progress. We eventually get the ventilation shafts closed. And then the third part is... it's called a perfect organism. And what happens is you have to actually... The alien from Alien shows up. And
the mother alien?
No,
the
mother alien.
It's just the actual alien from the movie.
Yeah. Instead of like all the scrub aliens that you've been killing the whole time, this one shows up, and the only way to kill it is to space it. You have to put it in the airlock, and then you have to have enough fight to kill it in the airlock, and that spaces it and that kills it. The thing is, at that point, the aliens in the deck have like this thing called double strike, where you take two wounds at the end of each turn, and so like. We're doing pretty well. Like the deck that I had was like pretty finely tuned, And I could easily generate enough fight most turns to kill the perfect orgasm. The problem is we had to find the airlock controls. And they're somewhere in there. And there's one turn that comes around where there are two aliens in the combat zone. One you can't avoid it strikes, and one that's doing like double striking. And I have like 13 fight or so. I had a huge amount of fight.
Plus coordinate.
Yeah, and I got some coordinate from some of the other players. And so I'm like, all right, sweet. So we're going to kill that alien. We're going to kill the double strike alien. I got two fight left over. I'll scan. The last, because the cards that are fixing to push into the combat zone.
You didn't ask your buddy if he had three fighters.
No. At this point, there's not really any facehuggers left in the deck.
Yeah, so, that's just all early game stuff.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, so I'll scan the last objective. And I flip it over, and it's a hazard. And I'm like, uh-oh, what does that mean? And like this point, the hazard means this: it's this ship's self-destruct button. And you have to pay 8 money to shut down the self-destruct button. And if the self-destruct button hits the combat zone, the ship explodes and everybody takes 3 strikes. And I have no money.
Because you had all fight.
Because I had all fight. I can't prevent the self-destruction. And I'm like, oh, shit. So self-destruction rolls around. Everybody takes 3 strikes. Like, Justin, since he was already half dead, he just dies from taking those 3 strikes. There's no saving him. And I felt okay, because I only had, like, 3 or 4 wounds, and I was, like, playing the gunner, and he has, like, 11 base health or whatever. And I'm like, flip over a 2, flip over a 3, flip over the 1-5 in the strike deck, and I just die. And then Ryan somehow improbably improbably lives, because
he flipped over a lot of ones.
Yeah, he flipped over a lot of ones. He flipped over like one, like the one that does 0 damage.
Yeah,
because there's like one of the strikes.
A near miss.
Yeah, it's like 0 damage, and you discard it. You just get lucky.
And fun fact: the artwork on the near miss is Bishop doing the knife game with Hicks's hand.
Yeah. So.
And I had like no damage on me, so I was fine.
Yeah. So Richard lives. The problem is, Justin and I had all of the coordinate fight cards, and
I was just keeping everybody alive as the medic.
Yeah, and Ryan was like really close to dead, and so they're just overwhelmed by aliens. The perfect organism shows up and kills them all.
Yeah. So the reasons that I love this game, I'm a huge Alien buff. I've always loved those movies. I still watch them every couple of months. The fourth one's not my favorite, but the first three, particularly the first two, particularly the second one.
I watched the third one recently, within the last, like, 2 months, and that movie is hot garbage.
I mean, the real question is,
now,
if you had Aliens and Predator in front of you, you would definitely watch Aliens over Predator.
Yes, 100%. Because I feel like the first Alien movie is actually a terrifying movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There is something on the ship. It can kill you whenever it wants. You just have to kind of live with that. You have to deal with it. You have to find a way. You have no weapons. You're not on a military cruiser. You know, you have welding torches. What the fuck are you going to do? That is terrifying to me.
They also use the...
The scene where Dallas is in the air... Spoilers. Dallas is in the air ducts, and he's looking for the alien.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene, and, like, you know, it's an old movie, right? You can see the carapace of the head of the alien behind him. He's like, all right, I can't find it, guys. I'm coming back down. And it just jumps out every time. I'm like, oh, my God! Holy shit! He killed him!
They used darkness very well in that movie.
They did. Yes, they did.
Yeah, light. Yeah.
I guess
light. In space, yeah. You know? I'm sure they don't have fluorescent light bulbs on their spaceships. Yeah. And like, the whole thing just being, you know, like, the only way that movie would have been better is, honest to God, if Ripley would have died at the end, that would have been sweet. You're like, holy shit. You know, this was the Alien 1. Like, sometimes I like that. I'm glad they didn't, because then Aliens came out, and Aliens is the best action flick ever. Like, I watched that movie the other day,
it's
and I was like, God, this movie's still good as shit.
Yeah.
It's way better than most movies that come to theaters. So anyway, but when you're playing the game, you really have, like, it's a dreadful game. Like, it's fun. But you're like, oh man,
this next turn could be bad.
Oh man,
yeah, like any card could be a face hugger, and that might just be it.
And aside from the masses of aliens, like in the first, because I've only played the first film scenario,
I played the second film scenario.
Is it amazing?
We got, like, so, like, the first objective is you have to, like, find enclosed colonists, like, the people that are hanging up. Like, you have to find them and like, rescue them or shoot them in the head, I guess. But Paul, like, that was the game where I played with the alien player. Because Paul gets hit with a facehugger. I can't save him. He can't save himself. He turns into the alien player. And on the alien player's next turn, he gets to play his entire hand. He plays six cards, made... he killed one of the other players, made a second player discard his entire hand, and then I would had to discard down to two cards. And I was like, I don't know how you win.
The question was that an average turn or was that a god?
That was like an average turn.
Really?
Yeah, that's like how brutal the alien decks are. Like, like, so the thing about Upper Deck, and I hate them as a company. I think they're a pretty terrible company. I think 9 times out of 10 they make an inferior product. And anytime they make something that's playable, they got lucky. In the case of like the versus card game. In the case of, and I'm going to use Legendary as an example. I think Legendary got lucky. But if you play Legendary enough, you know there are horrible, horrible design flaws that could have been smoothed over if it had been play tested any number of times.
Yeah. Did you think this one was one of them?
This one, no. So this one, exactly. The alien player definitely feels like something that was not play tested at all.
Yeah.
Now you play you play the aliens part, and it feels pretty play tested. Like you can tell they learned their mistakes from Legendary and decided to make a better product this way.
You kind of get that feel when you play villains.
Yeah.
When you play the base Legendary game, especially with their base scenario, I've sat there before and rickrolled the entire table because if you can get any number of the Wolverines and Hawkeyes that are on the table, you will literally draw your entire deck every damn turn.
Yes, exactly.
So, and there's almost nothing anyone can do about it. So yeah, there are some glaring design faults. Luckily, it does not stand in the way that the fact that it's a good game.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly.
I will disagree with you on Versus because I thought that game was terrible.
The game got better.
It did.
Like I said, because initially when it came out, it was pretty much one-sided. It was not good at all. But as you, like, when they actually play-tested their cards and shit like that later on, it got to be a better game. And
they're bringing it back.
Yes, as a living card game.
It's going to be a living card game. Could have swore that term was copyrighted.
Right,
by
Fantasy
but...
Flight, yeah.
So anyway, the reason I love Alien, it gives you that...
That dread.
Right, it's really... Especially if you're an alien fanboy like me, like it's just a huge deal, because like everybody, they just kind of seep into your role. Like I was the medic, and I had no interest in killing aliens, so like I was buying all the cards that healed. I was like, I'm the medic. I gotta keep you guys alive, you know. And it just, you care about your teammates, and like any game, I can say it's immersive. That's the word I'm looking for. That's why I play minis games. They're very immersive. So any board game that can do that is amazing.
I'll say this about it because I love deck building games. I own a number of them. Mm-hmm. This is the single most thematic deck building game I've ever played.
Yeah.
Period.
I mean, you really need to watch the movies, and then you will see like all of the references in it, and it's amazing.
Sure. Except I like to sleep at night.
Some of the deck building games are definitely kind of esoteric, like Dominion. Like, what exactly is the chapel doing for me? I don't understand. Like, why is, you know? So like, you know, how do all these cards relate to each other?
Well, I've played Dominion, so now I can actually talk. Dominion does have some cards in it where you put them on the table and they do nothing. They do absolutely nothing for the game itself. I've played some games where they had like reactive cards to counter what your opponent was going to do.
The defense cards.
Yeah, the defense cards. But nobody had any attack cards, so it was like, well, the moat's useless.
Yeah, exactly.
Why do I even want it?
And from a thematic standpoint, Dominion is a really light game. Because you don't really get immersed in the theme of that game.
You're like 17th century feudal lords that are attempting to build larger kingdoms
There's no characters in that game.
Exactly.
Right, whereas in Alien, like, the movies are about fighting for your life, and the game portrays that very well. Like, you were constantly like, oh my god!
Yeah.
And like, it's hard. And it should be. Like,
that being said,
hard to survive an alien encounter, I don't know.
That being said, I still enjoy Dominion. For a game that I don't have to think too much.
Dominion's great. I mean, Dominion created deck building card games.
Sure.
Like, that's what it did.
It's a...
every
it's
year
a game you play for the mechanic and not for the theme.
I've been going to Gen Con for like 7 years now. I remember the Gen Con before Dominion came out, and know the Gen Con after Dominion came out. The Gen Con before Dominion came out, there were like a ton of video game shit there. The Gen Con afterwards, everybody was trying to push some sort of deck building card game, and a lot of them were really bad because they didn't learn the lessons from Dominion.
You brought up one before we started recording that you had been playing Ascension.
Yeah.
And I really like Ascension myself.
I actually like it a lot more than Dominion because it has characters that, you know, you're just like, I don't know what this guy is, but he's got a really cool name. Also, I like the attack aspect of it where you have to kill monsters in the center of the table.
I like Ascension is another one of those games to me, because I got into it a couple of months ago. It's another one of those games to me that I don't necessarily play for the theme. It has one, unlike Dominion. But it's not necessarily a play. I play it for the mechanical aspect because I really like the mechanics.
But it was designed by pro Magic players.
See, this is where I was going. My first game ever was Magic. Cut my teeth on Magic. Learned to hate Magic with a burning passion. Can't stand the game now. And I'm like, this scratches the itch that Magic did, but for far less money and in a far less convoluted mechanical sense.
Yeah, that's deck building. I think that's part of the reason why deck building games really took off, is because they share a lot of similarities to like trading card games, because it's basically a trading card game sped up.
Yeah.
Like the process of you buying booster packs and opening it and stuff like that is just fast forwarded through it, and you're buying stuff in the middle of the game.
I have a roommate in college who loved deck building games, and he started playing Magic, and he never really played an actual Magic the Gathering card game. He just would build decks and be like, alright, that's my thrill out of this game. I'm like, seriously?
I'm done
like,
with that.
He's like, I'm like, really? That's what you like about this game? He's like, yeah, I love building the deck and making the mechanic in it, and then playing it once, see it work or not work, and then I'm done.
Well, a lot of my time, I was
that's an expensive hobby, man.
No. He never bought cards.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I bought cards.
I played Magic, and I enjoyed building the deck more than I did playing the game, but to me, the thrill was fine-tuning the deck and getting where I wanted it, and I would still play with it.
I love that, man. Like, the fretting over, like, do you play three copies of this, do you play four copies of it? Like, I love that stuff.
And that's why my preferred format in any game, any collectible card game, or trading card game, as the kids say these days. And one of the reasons I love deck building games is the limited formats, like booster drafts.
Yes, I love some booster drafts.
I will do booster draft to this day, and I hate Magic.
Now, the thing is, the best deck building challenge I ever got out of a collectible card game, which me and Nate had a discussion about one day, where he literally comes up to me. Nathan I will say this and give him this compliment, and I wrote his bio for the website for anyone who's bothered to read it, but Nathan can grasp just about any game you put in front of him if he tries. Mm-hmm. If he has an interest in it, he will grasp it. He gets it. He walked up to me one day, we were sitting up here, and he was like, "So Legend of the Five Rings." I'm like, yeah. He's like, "I don't get it." And literally, I don't understand how this part... The Legend of the Five Rings is a very... Frankly, in some ways, a very convoluted...
It's archaic. There are so many things in the game that are archaic, that are left over from previous generations of L5R, that every time they do a new base set release, they trim some of that out.
Sure, but the core of the game has remained the same for many years, which is you have two decks you have to build that have vastly different resources, that have totally different card types, and you have to somehow build this deck that has all of your permanents, to use Magic parlance, and this deck that has all of your spells, instance interrupts, your
enchantments.
Your enchantments and such. The crap, well, no, enchantments can be permanent.
Yeah.
All the crap that's not going to stick around, although I guess equipment.
Your followers.
And enchantments and such. And you have to make these two decks work together, even though they are totally separate decks. In essence, you have totally separate hands.
So, this is actually an interesting design space that I'm seeing explored in like digital card games, and I think it's even better for digital card games because you don't have to have like the actual logistics of trying to keep up with two separate decks with two separate colors of backs and so on and so on. Because it's something you can't do in a physical TCG is like pull a card out of nothing. Like, pull a card out of, like, thin air. But, like, in Hearthstone, if I play a card...
Oh, we're going to talk about Hearthstone now?
Well, I'm just saying. But in Hearthstone, like, if I make a creature that's a token, and it gets bounced back to my hand, that card's in my hand because, like, as far as the game concerns, it's still a card. But in Magic, if I put a token into play and the card gets bounced, it's gone forever.
Sure, and so, the same thing for L5R.
Yeah, so there's, and so L5R is one of those games that, like, I think if you were to put it into, like, a digital environment, have it like an iPad game or something like that, there's a lot of stuff you could do with the game that'd be really cool, and you cut down on some of the logistics nightmare that's in the game.
The biggest thing to that game that Nate and I have thrown is like, he's like, how do you tune the deck knowing there's, and basically, because there's no sideboard, there's no...
You play one game, unlike a lot of other TCGs. You play one game, that's it.
Until you get to, like, make the cut in the tournament. All girl players, one game, you got one shot to make it work, you have no sideboard, no nothing. And basically it's, no, you tune the deck until it does what it does extremely well, and you pray you do not hit the one silver bullet that will take out your deck.
Yeah, and just something like, and in any given time, there's, like, 9 factions.
Minimum.
There's 9 factions, and these factions all beat each other in various ways, and each faction can, in theory, be played 2, maybe 3 different ways each time. So, like trying to keep up, like in Magic, you know, you got 5 colors and then the combination of those colors, so it's pretty easy to keep track of that, but in this game, there's 9.
As for instance, I went and played in a Kote, that's the L5R version of a regional championship. I went and played South Carolina Kote. I had a... There's multiple ways to win. One of them is to gain honor points and have 40 honor points when your turn begins. One of them is to win through military and wipe out all of your opponent's provinces. You start the game with 4 of them. And the Lion Clan typically is a military-oriented deck. They're going to take out your provinces. I was playing Crane Clan, which is typically an honor deck. My goal is to ratchet up honor as fast as I can, and usually very defensively. I sat down, I'm playing a Lion player in round 1, which I didn't want to see because Lion decks at the time were also incredibly fast and got out of the gate really quick. My deck, not so much. And I'm sitting there just trying to get my defense started. And about turn 3, the Lion player wasn't attacking me, which is incredibly unusual.
Yeah, that's a sign. That's a warning sign.
Yeah, and as the game progressed another turn or two, I started seeing some of the cards in my deck show up in his. And I'm like, oh, wait a damn minute. And I even remember looking at him at the end of turn 5 because it was like, all my cards in my hand key off of battle. That's how I gain honor. I'm like, if he doesn't swing at me, I have to swing at him to get these cards in play. And so I attacked him, and suddenly I see the defensive honor cards that are in my hand come out of his. And I literally look at him and go, you're running a defensive honor deck. And he was like, so are you. And I'm like, well, this game just got terrible. And literally, we almost went to the time limit, and I stopped attacking. I'm like, no, you're going to swing at me, or we're just going to sit here and run the timeout.
Yeah.
And he started swinging at me because Lion can do that. And he starts swinging at me, and it literally comes down to one turn. Now, this is probably one of the best games L5R ever played, because we literally sat there, and it was frustrating as hell. I had 9 cards left in my deck, in my Fate deck. That's the one with all the instants and such in it. I had 9 cards left. In my hand, I have ways to draw 6 of those 9 cards. So I probably have 15 cards sitting here. There are 3 outs in my deck that will let me gain honor. He swings at me, he hits 41, but it's his turn. So I have to go, and then he has to go again to win. You have to start your turn with more than 40. If I cross 40 on his turn and I'm sitting at 38, then I'll win when his turn ends, no matter what his honor is.
Okay.
I draw all 6 of these blasted cards. I'm sitting here looking at my hand, and he goes, do you have any way in your hand to gain 2 honor? And I just literally sit there and drop my hand on the table and went, good game. I drew 6 cards, like the last three cards that gained me honor sitting at the bottom of the list today. I say that story because the very next round, I play against another Lion player, a guy named Steve Bewley, who I, great L5R player. He's playing Lion. He's playing the same exact Stronghold, the same kind of base card that the other guy was playing. And I just looked at him and smiled for a minute because I know Steve. I was like, so what's the chances you're playing a defensive Honor Runner there, Steve? And he goes, what do you think? same clan, same Stronghold, vastly different strategy. By the way, that game I got Rickrolled because because card draw is king in any card game. And I literally sat there. The Stronghold let him draw cards. Turn 1, he flips, what was it, Expendable Resources, card draw. Some other card, I can't remember what it was called, Traveling Peddler, card draw.
I remember that guy.
And he flips, I forget what the province was, or not, I forget what the region was that let you draw more cards too, but he flipped like all 3 of them on turn 1, and I was like, okay. I'm playing for second in a two-player game. Let's see how this is
going to
work. So.
What's up, Rich?
I have a game I want to talk about. I don't know how much you chumps are going to be able to talk about
we're
it.
We're not going to make fun of you. Good.
I want to talk about an amazing game that I've been playing lately, and it is called Pathfinder, the Adventure Card Game.
It's pretty good.
Pathfinder.
It's similar.
Yeah. It's like playing an RPG, just like fast forward.
It's like the deck building aspect of it's what's really interesting to me because it is a deck building game.
It shies away from a lot of the. Have you looked at it at all?
I've looked at it.
Okay.
I'll be honest. A lot of looking at the cards and whatnot without, and as we go grab the demo copy off the shelf here at Planet. A lot of it strikes me. Basically, I would want to play it. I do not think this is a game I would ever want to learn from the rule book.
Oh, Jesus.
Looking at the mass of humanity in the box, and I mean that because whoever put it up last did a terrible job. It looks really intimidating just to look at all the text on the cards and such.
It's a lot of text saying not much.
Oh, yes. Sure.
Is what it boils down to. This is another fully cooperative game.
Yes, which I love.
Well, it should be because it's D&D.
Exactly, and it like I said, it plays like a D&D kind of session in fast forward.
It's legally distinct from D&D.
Right,
similar but legally distinct.
So what happens
for any of those WotC people?
There are seven characters in the base box. Right. There's a character add-on pack that adds four more characters. So the first thing you do is it's four players out of the box with the character add-on. It goes up to six.
Okay,
this game is designed to play. Like, basically, I would almost say forever.
Yeah, but like, essentially it's a campaign.
Right.
And it's like a campaign that, because I think Gen Con, they released the next campaign box.
It's out now. Yeah. It's like a pirate.
It should be out now.
It's out
now.
Yeah.
So what happens is you pick a character, okay? And your character, you have three character cards. You have one that just has a picture of your character, and that's what you use to move around the locations. This just represents where you are. And then you have the first card, which is the one you use for a while, and it tells you, on one side, this is your deck makeup. So there are two ways to do this when you start the game. There's, in the rule book, a suggested character deck that you build, and that's what we did for our first time.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we know how to play, I would definitely like to sit down and actually design my deck from the first time. So you have multiple card types. You have weapons, spells, armor, item, allies, and blessings.
Sure.
So like, I'm actually playing this character in our game. So my deck is comprised of two weapon cards, one armor card, six items, two allies, and four blessings. It always has to conform to that. Now, as you level up in the game, which is best represented by completing certain missions, they'll give you feats. Feats are all these boxes that can be checked,
mm-hmm.
and they'll basically add to it. So, like, if you get a card feat, you can basically pick one of these. I can be like, weapon. And now I can have three weapons in my deck, and my deck size increased one. What's kind of unique about this game is the fact that your deck is your life. If you can't draw a card, you are dead.
Hmm.
If you have to draw and you can't, you're dead.
Okay.
Because of that, there's a lot of kind of unique things you do with cards. So there's discarding, which is self-explanatory. There's drawing. There's burying. So when you bury a card, what happens is it'll kind of just get shoved up under your character card. You don't have access to it the rest of the game, but you'll get it back at the end.
Okay.
There's recharging, which is when you recharge something, you actually put it on the bottom of your deck.
Okay.
All right? There is revealing, which is basically like a weapon. Most weapons you would just reveal from your hand to use the effect, because you don't lose your weapon when you swing it.
Sure.
Okay? And then there's banishing. It's like if you use something that says banish, it goes back in the box. It's gone. You ain't getting it back unless you find it again. So what's kind of cool about it is you play these adventures. There's an adventure pathway. We're on like level three of ours right now. So you will have an adventure card, and it will tell you your henchman, which is your primary victory condition. You have to find and defeat the boss.
Okay.
It'll give you any of the, like...
But, like, the villain cards look like this. And they'll have some extra combat checks on them or something like that. And they're much tougher than the stuff you normally encounter.
Is this particular one based off the Rise of the Rune Lords campaign?
Yes, it is.
I have played through that one, like, start to end. I love that campaign.
The whole first thing is Rise of the Rune Lords. Like, yeah, Stone Giants.
I haven't had a chance to play those, but from what I understand, I think they're... They're all of the characters from it, so...
Yeah. Like, I actually have a story for the end of that campaign.
Okay.
Quite funny.
So what happens is you get your adventure deck. It'll give you your villain, your henchman, it'll give you your locations. So you'll find the locations, and you'll have more locations per more players. So basically, if there's two, there's going to be four. The third player is going to add a fifth, okay? Each location has a list. You guys can see it here. I know the audience can't, but it'll tell you how many of each card type go in the deck for that location. Monsters, allies, etc. You will basically make that, like, you without looking, you would basically like shuffle up the monster deck. Like four monsters go there, so you would just deal four face downs to the location.
Sure.
And then you would do the armor weapons until you got everything there, and then you would shuffle up the henchmen and villains as a little side deck, and you'll put one at each location. You'll shuffle those, and those are your location decks. So what happens is you actually, every character starts at a location, okay, and you basically have to explore the locations and find the villain. There's a mechanic to the game called closing a location. What that means is you shut it down. Like, it's not there, you're done with it, and
you've explored it. Like, you've right. looted the dungeon in the
yeah. Right. There's a mechanic where if you fight the boss. So let's say the first draw I get on the first deck is the boss, and I fight him, and I beat him. So what happens is I'm going to take the boss card.
You're like, wow, that was pretty lucky, and that makes for a pretty short game.
So you have the deck of blessings, okay? You're going to draw a blessing for each open location, and then take the boss card. You're going to shuffle them up. You're going to deal one to each location, then reveal the last card. If it's the boss, you beat him, but if it ain't, he escaped. He's somewhere else now. Okay? So, what happens is as you explore, your turn goes like this. The first thing you can do is you can trade, you can basically just give a card in your hand to another a person at that location. So if me and Nate were both at the docks, I could be like, here, Nate, have this sword that I have for no reason, okay? After you do that, you're allowed to move, and you can just move to any location. And then you start exploring. So when you explore, you just flip the top card of that location deck. So, like, for example, if I flip this card here, it's a magic half plate. It tells me Constitution Fortitude 4. I'll look on my stat card, I'll find my Constitution or Fortitude, it'll tell me what dice to roll, I've got to hit or equal that number, if I do, it goes into my hand. Alright, so the reason that's important is once you complete the game, basically you and everybody that was part of the adventure will take their cards and kind of put them out, and you have to remake your deck, but you can do it with all the new stuff you got. Okay. So as you go, the cards get better in the adventure, so your deck gets better and bigger, and it's just really fun. Like, I've had a blast with it so far.
The only thing that has struck me as unappealing about it at this point has been the financial aspect of it, because you're constantly buying updates to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was gonna definitely voice an opinion. If you're one of the people who like hates the idea of DLC in video games, this game is very much marketed to make the maximum amount of money from you.
And then the other thing that that struck me is I'm like, I don't know about this. Is it seems like basically you're going to have the base set come out, and the marketing strategy they seem to have is Rise of the Rune Lords lasted a year. Gen Con, new base set, start over. And you can continue to play, I guess. You could just start over and play through the Rise of the Rune Lords things again because it's a deck building game, so it's going to change every time. But it's almost as if it's to appeal to, oh, well, this is the new one. Nothing else is ever going to come out for that version of this game. We will continue forward with this one. I wonder if there's a way to take anything from this and carry it over to the other one.
So the new base set is made. It's a new adventure. You can take your character deck from completing this and jump straight into that.
And the difficulty curve
from what I understand and have read, that is the way it's set up. Okay. It's the second adventure.
Okay, so
now I don't quote me because I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the cards. It just very recently came out. But the game has been fun. Like, what I would recommend doing for if anybody would be interested in this game, you get a group of people that are going to meet up to play it. Like me, Nathan, and Melanie play.
We meet up a party. Yeah,
we basically meet up. Sometimes twice a week because it's pretty quick. Like the adventures go pretty fast, and like so what I would recommend doing is get a group of like four people if you want to get into this, split the initial costs, and then just have each person pick up one expansion, because one person spending $100 not as not cool obviously, but five people spending $20 is way cooler.
Yeah, if you got that kind of game group that can split it up like
peaceably.
That.
Yeah. Not everybody does, but
no, we don't. I buy it all. Nathan's a bitch, but I'm kidding, man.
The appeal of playing this game over just having a Pathfinder group to do
it's a lot faster.
This is like a puzzle. It plays a lot like a puzzle because you're trying to. This is like problem solving skills and stuff like that. Whereas like
not a role playing game.
Exactly, it's not a role playing game.
It's
now,
similar.
It feels like playing one fast forwarded, but you don't have like the role playing aspects. Like I don't say good morrow. Fair.
He says good morrow to me, actually. But it's because my last name is
Marcel? Miracil? I hear you are a crafty elf capable of perhaps breaking into places that are so using means that are not so legal. Like, you don't do that
role
playing.
Don't jump
around
it.
And I don't say for a price. Asterisk, lift skirt, asterisk.
Would it be fair to say that this is essentially a campaign-styled deck-building game that is... I would call it a deck-building game that's RPG-themed.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly yes.
The
what
theme,
it is.
The theme is definitely there. Like, you know, because, like, the fighter dude that I've been playing, like, one of the random items that I have in my deck, he carries, like a pickaxe around. So anytime I get to, like, a door that requires, like, that would normally require, like, a rogue to break open, I can just use the pickaxe and just, like, hack the door down with it.
I would say probably the immediate appeal, if you're looking at this as an RPG...
Supplement?
Supplement. I hate to say replacement. But if you're looking at that, would be... You don't have to have a game master for this.
Correct. No, right. Definitely not.
And that would be one thing, because some groups have a hard time finding a GM. Some people would rather play than GM.
The other thing, like, one of the credits I'll give this game is the fact that from the outside looking in, it probably doesn't look like, you know, like all these characters are basically the same, but so far every character I've seen play plays completely differently.
And also says
that's because every single character is actually a different class.
Right. Yeah.
It is also one of the best designed, I will give them credit for this, that is the best designed deck building game box I've ever seen.
Correct. Yes. If you go to the rule book
for the whole blasted
if
gear.
You go to the rule book, I'll try to see if I can find the page, but in the rule book it's like this is where you put the shit.
And it is designed.
Yeah, here you go, right there. Tray layout, page 3 in the rule book. This is where you put your shit,
right?
So
and
that it doesn't get
the
unsorted.
Box is designed from the get go because, like, this is all of the villains you get in the starter box.
Yeah, there's
it is designed to hold everything that goes with this set.
Yeah, they actually made it where it will hold all the Rise of the Runeland cards.
It's very important for gameplay too because a lot of cards will say summon this, and you're just like.
Sorry, you know, we'll reach to the spell section, you know, yeah, and get that. So,
but it's very fun. I suggest you all try it. So I have it. I'm, you know, more than glad to.
You're more than willing to let people play. And I'm more than willing to mooch.
It scales pretty well. Like the difficulty doesn't get if you're playing with more people, like more locations are added. So it'd just be a longer time between your turns, but, you know.
It also, like, the actual adventures, like, because I was like, man, these don't feel like they're getting harder, and then we hit one, and I was like, holy shit, you know, wow.
There's another game that is coming out soon, very similar to this in idea that I really do want to try, because the theme appeals to me more than a fantasy theme, and that is Shadowrun Crossfire.
I have played that. I played that at Gen Con.
And
it is missing something. It's almost there, but it's missing something. Because we played several times, and we could not beat the first scenario.
Oh, wow.
And you know me, and you know, like, my friends, we're not, like, bad at games. Like, if we're going to play a game, like, the first couple times you play it, you don't know what you're doing, you don't know how to prioritize things.
Sure.
That makes sense. Like the first time we played Aliens, like, we were murdered horribly, like, before we even got to...
Anything.
So the big thing about the Shadowfire game is like how fucking hard it is. We were playing with 4 people, and like there are rules basically to run away from like an encounter, and you get experience. So like in Pathfinder, like let's say we couldn't beat Pathfinder, but we were like, okay, in the middle of this, instead of us all dying and having to like reroll characters, we all just decide to run away and take what loot that we have. Now the thing is, like, you don't have loot per se in the Shadowrun game.
No, you get you gain up experience to buy skills. It's karma.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's exactly because you use karma in the RPG. So the big difference is that like instead there's not a wide variety of like it might be one of these games that get way better when more stuff comes out for
it. In the chair, Richard.
Because as it is, there's like 6 different cards for each of the different types of abilities. Like you've got a face character, a combat character, a spell character, and a tech character.
Right.
And the variety of cards for each of those different types of characters, like, there's not enough variety, is what I'm saying. There's, like, 6 total cards. And,
Well, I do know that they've got an expansion coming that's supposed to add more to it.
I hope so, because, like, the game that I played was frustrating because it was... Like, the core concept of the game was really, really strong. But the fact that we could not beat the scenario on, like, 4 different attempts. Now, the fact that we played 4 different attempts says something to the game because we actually were like, we must be doing something wrong if we can't get through this starter scenario. Like, the one they say, if you've never played the game before, start with this one.
Now, to throw another game in there with that...
Like, we were never close. Like, let me put that out there. We were never close to being the scenario.
Wow.
There were times where we were like, okay, we're doing pretty good. We're doing all right. We're not doing bad. Wheels fall off, bus sets on fire, and that's just it. We just explode. Like,
it sinks into the swamp.
Yeah, it sinks into the swamp.
I will throw one more game out there, and I think we'll probably close on this one because we're just past an hour at this point.
I got a fancy football draft to get to.
There was one that Richard wanted to play. I had picked up basically on the strength of the company's reputation alone. Greater Than Games released a new game called Galactic Strike Force, which has, in some people's opinions, one of the most unappealing boxes ever made. But
it's a fucking ugly box.
It really is. It's basically a gray box that looks like the paneling of a ship with just an inset of a really gorgeous picture that would be fantastic if they'd have bloated up and made it the whole box. But anyway, the game itself, Greater Than Games made Sentinels of the Multiverse, which I think most of the people at this table love.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yep.
So Galactic Strike Force is not dissimilar from Sentinels in that you have a deck, you have a character, there's a central villain, and it's totally cooperative. But it is vastly different in that there is a deck-building element to it as you go from one sector of space to another. There's three of them.
Literally, you said every similarity. That's all.
Yeah,
like,
that's it.
It's completely different other than that.
And then you start buying... the one thing that we never actually had to run into was, and when your character dies, you can still impact the game.
Yeah, like, you're basically incapacitated.
You got
like,
to play it?
Yeah, I played it.
The first time we played this game, there's different sectors, and the ways you beat the game is you either destroy every opposition ship that's on the board, or you defeat the enemy flagship, which generally has special conditions to come in play. It's like flipping the villain in Sentinels. Or, to lose, every Strike Force ship gets grounded, or every sector gets overrun. And the way a sector gets overrun is there's three station decks for most sectors. We got hosed and had one that only had two. And when you engage enemy ships, every enemy ship that is not engaged attacks the station. When it attacks the station, it flips the top card of the station deck and it goes in order. So 1, 2, 3. It can never flip more than three. And when it flips the third one, that sector's overrun. You flip the sector card and there's some effect for that sector that's going to suck because it's overrun. Well, the first game we played four players. We could not lose. We actually got to that point in the game where there was no way actually for us to lose. There was also no way for us to win. The game literally stalemated. Where there was one sector because
you fought out Space Korean War?
Yeah, basically. Because there were sectors... each sector of space can only hold so many ships. It can hold the number of players plus two. So in the game we're playing, I mean, each sector could hold six ships. Well, one sector had six enemy ships in it.
You can't get into
it. We can't go to it. Luckily, I knew that when we started playing the second game. So that game, we stalemated. They were never going to take the other two sectors. We could never get into that one. So the second game we played, which was...
The second game got to a point where we couldn't lose, and we didn't fucking lose.
Yeah. But now, at the beginning of the game, we were actually sitting there going, holy fuck.
Yeah, because it's one of those games where, like, the beginning is just fucking daunting. You're like, man, how?
Right, right.
And but as the game progresses, you're like, okay. And then eventually you're like... You're driving the Death Star.
Because we were sitting there at one point, and it's like...
I named this episode. This episode's called Driving the Death Star.
Okay, it might have been Richard Drops a Dime. But, so,
that's pretty great.
But the whole thing with the game is we were sitting there playing. Of course, it's like Sentinels in that they give you a suggested first scenario. So we're basically playing against the Baron Blade of this game. And it does have elite rules, advanced rules, like Sentinels. So I kind of want to play it under those rules against different bad guys just to see what's what. But there are different missions that come up. It's got a lot of moving parts. But as I play it, I almost feel like there is something wrong with this game. And I almost think what it is it's the bell curve of the game, of a single game, is shot. It is, you start the game, and it's, instead of being, you know, gradual, and it should get gradually harder so that when you
beat the bad guy... It gets gradually easier.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah, because you start out like, here's you, and here's the blast of difficulty 5 feet above your head, and it's like, you're smacking into a brick wall of ships every damn turn. And we sat there because we were like, how do we get through all, because we would defeat two ships in a sector, because you have to split up, otherwise you're fucked. you beat two ships in a sector, and then four more show up, and you're like, yeah. Oh, crap. And it, we literally had to point, like, it was, we played five players, so myself, Richard, and
Justin
were in one sector, fighting off whatever, and we finally got to a point, the ship I had could become a juggernaut by itself. I was basically playing the Borg, and, I mean, it even looks like a Borg cube, and legally distinct, though. So... I finally go, okay, there's like six ships in the center sector. If there's one more there, we're not getting in. So time for somebody to go there and start blowing shit up. And I went to do that. So I'm literally, I'll clear out the center sector while y'all get everything
Mike
else.
Mike had like the tanky ship. Like he had just the piles and piles of armor. I was the one defense, five attack ship.
And then the other defensive tank was Justin, and he could buff. Because this is one mechanic I actually really do like. When you attack an enemy ship, you have a... primary attacker, but you can have a secondary attacker as well. The secondary attacker is not actually attacking the enemy ship.
They're buffing you in some way.
Yeah, they're buffing you. They have a special ability. So, like, if I'm the secondary attacker, it's as if my ship is extending its shields around you while you're fighting.
It gives you plus two defense. My attack thing is, like, I'm just... My ship was basically, like, this bunch of ships glued together by orcs, which is cannons.
Yeah.
So my thing is, like, I give you plus two attack.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of interesting mechanics in the game, and I hope we may talk about it a little bit more on a later podcast, but we're actually getting a little late.
It was fun. It just the game was not. I need to play it more before I buy it. I'm gonna put it that way. I need to learn the mechanics more because I also felt like there were never turns. It was just there was a phase we were all doing stuff at the same time.
That's another thing is there is no real turn. One turn is everybody does their shit.
We're in different sets, so we're just over there like buying stuff and doing this and attaching parts to the ship. The mechanic that I think is kind of weird. It's like, so when you fight a ship, you have an attack and you have a shield. So I attack this ship. The ship I'm attacking is 3 fight, 3 shield. And let's say I'm 4 fight, 2 shield. Okay? So I'm going to go in. I'm going to look at my fight, his defense. For every point above, I do a point that he loses, like, permanently. Okay? From that. And then he's going to do that to me. But to kill a ship, you have to reduce the power and fight to 0. You lose defense before fight.
Yeah, you actually have to... Well, I found that to actually be very intuitive, and I'll tell you why. Because you have... They read it as weaponry and defense. So, add those two numbers together, 3, 3, or 4, 2, you have 6. That's the power of your ship. Your power has to be reduced to 0. It's as if you're eating through the shields before you get to everything else.
Yeah.
No, I get
it's very, very Star Trek feeling.
Yeah, yeah. Like... The game is fun. There are cards that, like, because every ship has its own deck, and your deck plays face up.
Yeah, and what happens is you draw 4 each turn. You always know the next card.
So my deck basically got to a point where everything in my deck was attached to my ship, but 4 cards. 2 that I was never going to play, because they didn't do anything but reduce my ship's power. And 2 that just basically said, remove 2 power from every unopposed enemy ship in your sector. So I'm just like, everybody loses 4 power. And like, that's how the game progressed too. We were just like blowing chunks out of the sky. Yeah. Like, our ships were so badass. And that was kind of cool watching my ship go from a hunk of junk to like the Death Star.
That's kind of the satisfying thing is watching the ship build, because they actually refer to it as a ship building game as opposed to a deck building game.
The Galaxy Trucker.
Yeah.
No, no, that analogy. No, not like Galaxy Trucker.
I still need to play that game. I've never played
it. Oh man, so fun.
Leave?
No, his stuff's over there.
Wow. Oh.
Well, folks, and Crispy appeared.
Hey, Crispy. I was going to talk
mistakes were made.
Oh, the soundboard's working.
Speaking of, Crispy, how did your game go?
I won.
Congratulations.
Screenshotter, it didn't happen. Yeah. Nah. But you won?
I did.
I think Rich is
I broke
shock.
Rich.
Crispy broke me.
Okay. Folks, until next time on Rage Quit Radio, I'm Mike.
I'm Rich.
Nathan.
And Steve-O.
We'll see you next... And Crispy. And we'll see you next time on RQR.
You've been listening to Rage Quit Radio. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/RQR podcast. You can visit us online at ragequitradio.blogspot.com. Listen to us on Podomatic, ragequitradio.podomatic.com, or find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can email us at ragequitradiopodcast@gmail.com.